Thank you. My name hasn't changed since this morning's talk. So I'm going to talk to you about conservation challenges for stillwater breeding western toad. And western toads are unique as a stillwater breeding species in the Chehalis Basin, in that if you recollect from the talk this morning, you didn't see western toad on a suite of species that was analyzed. 187 sites in the Chehalis floodplain, we never found western toad breeding at any site. However, we did find the postmenorrheic stages, juveniles and adults, at three sites, and we, in all three cases, there were breeding sites in a flowing water habitat margin close by. So the point being is that everywhere we've looked in the Chehalis Basin, western toad breed in flowing water habitat or stillwater habitat that is created when the hydrographs go down. So we spent basically the last 6 years surveying all potential western toad habitat in the Chehalis Basin. What this shows you is the survey breaches in different colors by year where we've looked at. We've covered probably something over 80% of the potential western toad habitat in the basin. And we've covered some of it twice, mostly to get an idea of inter-year variation. So the colors basically just tell you the years. The green dots are the positive localities where we have found western toad. And the thing that should jump out at you is that we basically found them in two areas. So we found them in the headwaters, headwater area coming off the Willapaw Hills, and selected tributaries of the Chehalis in the Olympics. And what those areas have in common, if you look at them hydrologically, so if you look at the national hydrological layer, they all represent stream reaches that are fifth to seventh order. So from here on out, I'm going to call that medium river habitat. You do not find them in the lower main stem. We've done extensive surveys there when you get the eighth order streams, and you do not find them in fourth order headwater streams. And what I'm going to show you next basically has to do with sort of understanding what potentially limits their distribution and how that feeds into potential restoration. So this is just another picture of the same thing there. I've just put all the reaches in the same color that we've covered. But it also has all the rest of the known localities for western toad in the Chehalis Basin. And so you can see there's some scattered things here and there. The main portion that we have not covered is the Winooche, where we know there are toads. And the Hopewing and Wishbaugh might have toad habitat, but it's sort of doubtful based on habitat conditions, and you'll see why when I talk about the potential limiting factors next. So western toad deposit eggs in paired jelly strings that are very large. So toad clutch size from a single toad, small clutch size is 8,000, large clutch size is 22,000. And they lay in shallow water unattached to any brace. And as you'll see, that potentially limits their habitat, and which may explain a lot of their distribution in medium river situation. So looking at the shallow water depth, we did measurements at oak position sites in 2016 and 2017. We actually have some more from 2019, but those haven't been developed yet. And the bottom line is basically that they lay in water that's about 10 centimeters deep on average, which is about 4 inches. And the difference between years are very constant. Now, the variability here is primarily variability that is related to the fact that we didn't get to the oviposition site right at oviposition. Had we been able to get to every oviposition site at the time those eggs were actually laid, we'd probably even have less variability in that oviposition depth. So we asked the question, basically, what's the difference between egg mass locations and random locations? And so what we did with the 2017 data is we took paired random locations within a fixed, randomized direction and distance from the oviposition depth location that was measured. And you could do this a variety of different ways in terms of the span of distance. But we decided to choose a reasonable distance because obviously if you go too far, then you're probably not choosing an area that would be within the span of what an adult would basically sort of select within a small area. And so that bound, we chose a bound of 10 meters basically. If that 10 meters put us on the bank, then we had to choose another site, another random direction and distance. And what you can see is western toads clearly select locations that are preferentially shallow relative to what is available. And what does that mean? Well, when the hydrograph goes down, and typically in the Chalice Basin goes down in the Willpaw Hills area and to near base flow, somewhere in late May to early July. And that will vary depending on whether you have a drought year or a wet year. Drought years, it tends to be advanced. Wet years, it tends to be protracted. And we'll basically oviposit in stream only on shallow shells that have the appropriate depth. And so what we think is happening if you go downstream is you lose habitat that does not have the appropriate depth in terms of the cross-sectional area of the stream. It either gets too deep or the water velocity becomes too fast. So let's take a look at water velocity for a second. We did the same thing in both 2016 and 2017. And western toad are truly a stillwater breeding species. They basically deposit eggs with water velocities at 3 to 4/100ths of a centimeter per second. And if you take the same type of random locations and you measure water velocity of those random locations, you see that they are almost invariably faster. Now, it just so happens that in the upper Chalice, you have a cross-sectional area of the stream bed that has a lot of this really appropriate depth, shallow habitat that has the right velocities for oviposition. And so you see a differential amount of oviposition there. And this gives you a picture of the sort of relative abundance. And this is a density index in which we counted the number of either breeding sites or egg masses. Breeding sites is simply a location where western toad laid one or more egg masses. And when they lay egg masses, they just aggregate these egg streams on top of each other, basically. So in many cases, you have more than one egg mass at a breeding site, which is why you see a difference between the two columns. The thing I want to point out here, we did this analysis mostly to compare areas that were within the proposed footprint of the dam and reservoir in the headwaters of the Chalice. The striking feature of this pattern is that we had much higher breeding index densities in within the footprint of the dam and reservoir than we had outside of it. When I first saw this, I got a little bit worried about it, and after thinking about it some more and seeing some some data that Bob Bilby had on cutthroat trout, we actually decided that it may simply be a response to the 07-08 event that opened habitat up that made it particularly good for western toad. I'm going to come back to that in a second. So that was the situation in the Willapa Hills. This is sort of the same thing in the Olympics, but what I'll point out here is that if you look at the numbers here, the density index counts, they're much more modest, the range in the Olympics, compared to the very high values that we have in the area of the Chalice that's within the proposed footprint of the reservoir and dam. And the next thing I'm going to show you, I need to attribute my epiphany to John Ferguson, who's sitting in the room here. And John basically challenged me one day and said, well, you know, Mark, you really got to think about how you can restore the western toads. And I thought, you know, here we've got this, we know more or less the areas that they breed in. And I've talked about the downstream aspect, but the upstream aspect, you lose them basically when the stream narrows and they become too shaded. But I was sort of thinking that, well, western toads are pretty much in all the medium river areas, so what can we do? And we had a natural experiment on the SATSIP. It gave me a really great idea about this. So what this is it's actually the high resolution change detection information that we developed Ken Pierce for the entire Chalice floodplain. And what you're seeing is the lower end of the SATSIP River near its confluence with the Chalice River. And the way Ken does this high resolution change detection, and we did this over three time periods, 38, 70s, 90s, and 2013, is he plots stuff that was only visible for either of the individual time periods or across time periods, and that's what all the colors mean. As you can see, this is a very high meander area, but the reason I'm bringing it up is right below the Highway 12 bridge, which is, let's see if I can show this. Oh, do we not have the thing on? I know. I'm not kidding. That's all right. Right near the top, you can see the Highway 12 crossing the Chalice. And just below there, back in 2017, we had a new meander, small meander, created on the east side of the river. Western toad colonized that meander very rapidly. And 2 years later, they're already small cottonwoods and willows that were coming in and shading that starting to shade that meander out, and you're starting to see less usage. In the winter of 2019, which was very wet, we had a huge change with an avulsion. So if you look at the purple portion with that big loop just before it gets into the Chehalis, that's what it looked like in 2013. That's also what it looked like in 2018. But in 2019, there was an avulsion that cut off that loop. So before that loop was cut off, that was deep water, relatively fast flowing. When that loop got cut off, all of a sudden, that entire meander became essentially still water habitat that had a lot of shallows. And western toad were in there almost instantaneously the following season. So the point is, although it's difficult to think about how we would do restoration, if we can basically either create or enhance situations where the river can meander, we can probably enhance the process for western toad. And the reason I say this is they're highly responsive basically to opening the habitat. So in the eruption following Mount St. Helens, there were 500 ponds created on the pumice plain. The first colonizer was western toad. in studies that were done in Montana, when fires burned a variety of area in Glacier National Park, western toad was the only species that had a short-term positive response. All those processes that are opening habitat are different. And if you think about what's going on in the Chehalis, obviously, we can't depend on volcanic eruptions, but we can depend on the potential reliability of the meandering of off-channel meandering of the river to create the type of off-channel habitat that western toad would use. And I would be happy to take any questions if we've got any time.